with Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Everything around me. Green, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Cash rules, everything around me. Green, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo.
7 minutes after the hour 5. As I take you home in the torrential downpour that is taking place that has led to flash flooding. That Bill Evans, our weather guy, wasn't even able to elucidate on. Couldn't finish his sentence because he must have gotten hit by a bolt of lightning. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, buckle down if you happen to be in your car listening to your terrestrial radio. Pull over to the side if the torrential downpour is too much and the flash floods come, as Bill Evans has predicted. But anyway, I can predict each and every day whether there is a drop of rain in the sky, whether there is a deluge, whether a sun clouds are up, or it is just a drop-dead gorgeous day, that there will be delays on the subways. There will be track failures. There will be track changes. There will be signal problems. In fact, the only two trains in the system over the weekend that seemed to be running on a normal course was the L train and the G train. Every other train had problems. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And in fact, the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Facha Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, has said this over and over to all commuters, whether you're taking the Long Island Railroad, whether you're taking the IRT, IND, or BMT.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
He is not talking to the mayor. The mayor is not talking to him on this subject matter as they go their separate paths in trying to come up with a solution. And the governor has said that he's come up with this concept of offering a few million dollars from the MTA Treasury to a brainiac out there, or two, or three, who can come up with some genius ideas on how to repair and maintain and get back on track the system that is falling apart as we speak. But while all that is taking place, State Senator Michael Gennaris, Democrat of Queens, has come up with a proposal that he feels can remedy this situation, and he joins us right now in the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Mike.
Thanks, Curtis. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so explain your concept, because the initial reports of it seem to indicate that you wanted wealthiest downstate residents to foot the bill to fix the city subway and rail systems that are problematic now. Would that be correct?
Yeah, well, there's two pieces to what I'm proposing, and let me just take a step back for a second. You and I are both old enough to remember back in the 90s when the big crisis the city was facing was crime being out of control. A bunch of leaders got together and had the vision to enact the Safe Street, Safe City program. So they said, let's take a surcharge of taxes on folks for a very limited amount of time that will expire. Let's use that money to hire more police officers. And now we're sitting here 20 years later reaping the benefits of that wisdom in historically low crime rates. Well, right now we're at a point where the mass transit system is in a similar crisis. You talked about it. I know you have your commuter whiner line where people can call in daily and talk about their awful experiences. The people I represent who take the N and the 7 and other lines, every day there's breakdowns, there's delays. There was that awful experience where the train got stuck and lost power in the 100-degree tunnel the other week. This thing has fallen apart, and it's fallen apart because we have not invested the way we should, either the state or the city, frankly. No one's free of blame for this. So I'm using the model of Safe Street, Safe City. I'm saying let's have a temporary surcharge for people that earn over $1 million a year for a 3-year period. We'll raise the money the MTA needs. And then I don't necessarily trust the MTA to spend it properly because they've been in charge all this time, and obviously something's not working the way it should. So I also would like to see an emergency manager put in to make decisions on how that money gets spent and make sure it's going where it's supposed to maintain and upgrade the existing subway system and the commuter rail system so that we can hopefully deal with these unnecessary breakdowns
once and for all.
All right, but State Senator Michael Gennaris, anytime you say to a taxpayer a temporary state income tax surcharge, they get a little squeamish, a little nervous that temporary may become permanent. What safeguards would you put into place to make sure it's just for the three-year ride?
It's a fair question. I'll give two answers to that. Right? Because anything we put in law, a future legislature can change. So the key is that we're using the model of Safe Street, Safe City, where the leaders of the city and state kept their word and they allowed those taxes to expire. That's the model we're trying to use here as well. And the second thing about it is a lot of these expenses are capital expenses. They're infrastructure. Right? It's changing the switches in the tunnels or increasing the power supply, what have you. Those are, for the most part, one-time expenses. There is a shortfall in the MTA capital plan right now. The idea is spend these 3 years raising the money to fill that hole and let them do their work to fix the infrastructure of the system. So those shouldn't necessarily be expenses that we need at that to fund at that level going forward beyond the short amount of time that we need to raise this money.
Now, I see as part of your projected idea is you would have a temporary surcharge attached to city hotels. How would that work?
That would just be a small fee. There's already a hotel motel tax in New York City, and I think the idea is in addition to those who can most afford to contribute, being the people making over $1 million, one of the largest group of people that benefits from the mass transit system are tourists who come to the city so frequently and use the subways to get around. And so I thought it was only fair that group of people also contribute to solving the problem. And so there would be a modest charge added on to hotel and motel rates.
All right. But Governor Cuomo has said that the city should pay more of its fair share in its contributions to the MTA. Just the past 2 weeks alone, the mayor de Blasio has rejected that idea. He was pushed last week by his Democratic challenger in the mayoral primary campaign, Sal Albanese, who said if he were mayor, he would contribute more. Some of the other candidates running for de Blasio's position have said likewise. Do you feel that whoever is the next mayor of the city of New York should be contributing a larger share of the MTA dollars to maintain and to run the city subway and bus system?
The short answer is absolutely yes, but I would also answer absolutely yes to the question of whether the governor and the state should be doing more. I think both should be doing more. And we can either talk or we can do. We can point fingers or we could solve the problem. And regardless of whether it's the state government or the city government that's funding it, what I have proposed is something that will be funded by the people of the downstate region who earn enough to be able to afford to contribute to the solution. And so that's what we're trying to do here is create a dedicated revenue stream that is gets us out from under the conflict between the state and the city and the constant battle that they're doing and actually focus on the strap hangers and solving the problems that they face on a daily basis.
Have you had any interest in your proposal yet from Republicans across the aisle from you?
Not at the moment. This is something we put out this morning. Unfortunately, the first comments from their spokesman were planting their flag with the wealthiest, with the millionaires that they seem to represent too often, as opposed to the working people, who are the people that ride the mass transit in our city. I'll give you an example. There are, on Long Island, we'll take Nassau and Suffolk counties, there are 8,000 filers that would qualify for earning over $1 million a year that would have to pay a little extra under this plan. But there are 300,000 people on Long Island who take the LIRR every single day. And if the Republicans want to say that they're more interested in defending the 8,000 millionaires than the 300,000 workers who are using the mass transit system, then I say let them go have that debate with their constituents because I don't think it'll go very well for them.
And then finally, State Senator Michael Gennaris of Queens, a bigger problem because it bleeds into other issues that affect how the state deals with the city and vice versa is it seems we're at a point now where neither the governor, in this case Cuomo, or the mayor, de Blasio, can get on a telephone conversation, have a civil discussion, and try to resolve what are problems for both. Do you ever see that being resolved? Because it just seems like it's getting worse and worse by the month.
Well, it certainly should be resolved because personality conflicts have nothing to do with the people of New York who are here to serve. I would hope that they would be able to understand the true purpose why we're all here is to serve the people we represent. It's not about getting the upper hand over the other guy or some kind of political battle. It's about doing the work of the people. And so I don't enjoy reading about that conflict. I don't think it serves the people well. And I hope they can do whatever's necessary to get beyond it.
Do appreciate that. That's an idea that is taken from the days of the latter part of the Dinkins administration, the passage of Safe Streets, Safe Cities, in which crime was at an all-time high. And Gennaris is modeling his plan to rescue our crumbling transit system on that same model. It would be a 3-year temporary state income tax surcharge on millionaires in the 12-county MTA region. We've been bereft of ideas. This is certainly an idea. It will be challenged. But at least it's percolating to the surface. Unlike the inability or incapability of either grown up in the room, Cuomo or de Blasio, to pick up the phone and have a sit down and try to resolve this situation that affects both the state and city. Right now, that ain't happening. So ideas should be forthcoming fast and furiously.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
You'll be the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Go. Go, 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 shawty. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't...
525. It was unusual for President Donald Trump this weekend to decide that instead of heading down to Mar-a-Lago in Florida, a little too hot, or up into Jersey to his complex and golf course, a little too far, that he would just go the route that other presidents have gone in the past, to Western Maryland, and for his first time to Camp David. And it wasn't the special aid or hotels or Motel 6 that he thought. He was there with his wife, Melania, his son, Barron, who are now living at the White House permanently, no longer at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And they were celebrating his birthday because earlier in the week it was his birthday, but because of the shooting that took place on that congressional softball practice field, the president decided to cancel that. I don't know if he had Curtis Jackson, a.k.a. 50 Cent, singing to him, but knowing Trump, he might have. What he was singing was a totally different tune, though, on Friday when he started his Twitter rampage saying, "I am being investigated by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, Witch Hunt." And then he indicated on the Twitter that he was being investigated for obstruction of justice, as the Washington Post was reporting. And then all of a sudden, a firestorm of response by his personal attorney, Jay Sekulow, who said something completely different on the Talking Head shows on Sunday.
The president is not under investigation by the special counsel. The tweet from the president was in response to the 5 anonymous sources that were purportedly leaking information to the Washington Post about a potential investigation of the president. But the president, as James Comey said in his testimony, and as we know as of today, the president has not been and is not under investigation.
Okay, so he got it off his chest. But then in his next appearance on the Fox News Channel, Chris Wallace wasn't having any of that.
You said he is being investigated, and it's not
Chris,
just being... Wait a minute, Jay, it's not just being investigated for firing Comey. There's also the question of what he said to Comey when Comey was still the FBI director.
Chris, let me be clear. You asked me a question about what the president's tweet was regarding the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. That's what you asked me. And I responded to what that legal theory would be. So I do not appreciate you putting words in my mouth when I've been crystal clear that the president is not and has not been under investigation.
Well, on the line to discuss Donald Trump again in his weekly column, which I guess is described as Trump's American columnist for Metro, the free newspaper that you can get in the greater metropolitan area, is a guy oftentimes heard here on WABC as a host, as a substitute. Ellis Hennigan, thanks for jumping back on board, Ellis.
Thank you, Curtis. As far as I know, I am not being investigated.
You sure of that?
No, I'm not sure. Because that's exactly the point here, Curtis. When the upper levels of federal law enforcement begin to investigate you, they do not, I repeat, do not immediately pick up the telephone and say, "Curtis, you're under investigation." They just start investigating.
Why do you think, though, that Trump's personal attorney, Jay Sekulow, was apoplectic yesterday. By the time he finished his talking head rotation of interviews, he was like he was busting a gut.
Yeah, Chris Wallace is the one who I think really got under his skin. You know, sometimes people think they're going to get an easy job over there at Fox, but do not show up on Fox News Sunday if you want softball questions.
Well, I mean, in this case, though, the president tweets out that he's under investigation based on the Washington Post story. We were told by Sean Spicer, in fact, just last week, that whatever the president tweets, it's official business.
The president is the president of the United States, so they're considered official statements by the president of the United States.
So why the spin to try to convince us that's not really what's true?
Well, you know, I think that there was some bounce back on this, blowback that it did not look good. People were starting to say, well, hey, you've been saying you weren't under investigation, now you're saying you are. I think they sent the lawyer out for a little damage control, but it all just seems so preposterous that I think more people are making fun of the lawyer than are getting their minds changed.
Now, you've followed Donald Trump for quite some time. Before he even had the idea of running for the presidency or any elective office, is this just par for the course in terms of his behavior, his manic depressive flip of the script behavior that you've experienced in the past?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much a par for the course. A couple of differences, though, is he was not president before, so people pay a whole lot more attention to what he says. And the importance of it is so much greater than it ever was. If Donald was bragging about his latest skyscraper or girlfriend, it didn't matter so much. But when he's the president, Curtis, people look at this stuff really closely.
Well, in fact, the reason he says he does it is because of guys like you, Ellis, in the Fourth Estate. He's got to get his message directly to the peeps. He can do that with Twitter, but through you, you filter it, you botulize it, you abort it, so his true message can never get out.
You mean we ask follow-up questions and try and add some facts to the equation? Is that what you mean?
Well, it's a lot easier, right, when you're just dealing with 140 characters than to have to do a Q&A and go back and forth and then maybe have to respond to some of your continued questions by email.
And you know it. Listen, a guest comes on your show, Curtis, and if he says something that doesn't seem right, you can ask a follow-up and maybe seven more while you pin him against the wall. Sure is easier to just put it out 140 characters at a time with no response.
And as a journalist, you salivate. You want these tweets to keep coming fast and furiously.
Absolutely. Oh, please keep tweeting, Mr. President. And on a serious note, really, it does provide us with an unfiltered window on the mind and the soul of our president. And, you know, we learn a lot that way. We've learned a tremendous amount about Donald Trump from these tweets. I hope he never stops.
You know, the one good thing is we know this president is not a lush. We know the past presidents have been half in the bag by the time it's 8 o'clock at night. Could you imagine if they had Twitter available to them, Nixon, LBJ, etc.?
You know, I think it's just about crazy enough, stone cold sober this time around. Be careful what you wish for, Curtis. I don't think we really want that.
Well, anyway, I just remember how difficult those presidents were, particularly as the day wore on. Our day is wearing on, and obviously there are flash floods, there's squalls out there. It may be treacherous going. So pull over to the side, max and relax, because you're going to get some news headline updates from Ken Duffy.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
All right, you just heard Jeff McKay. Your water planning out there. The water is coming down treacherously, tsunami-like style, and in squall-like manner. Just pull over to the side. Chill out. Listen on your terrestrial radio to the rest of the show, because it's a throwback to yesterday, Father's Day. And for me, you can go to the Curtis and Ebony Facebook page, and you can see I dedicated to my visit with my dad, who unfortunately passed away in 2012, so we were at his graveyard site where my mom was recently buried right next to him. So I took my oldest son, and I was able to reminisce For many of you, thank God, your father is still alive. For some of you, not so good, because he's a real curmudgeon or contrarian. But on the line to discuss his Father's Day extravaganza is the great columnist from The Record, Bill Ervolino. Thanks for jumping on board again on the Drive Home at 5, Bill.
Thank you, Curtis. How you doing? Was your Father's Day any good?
It was great because I got a chance to visit my dad's gravesite with my oldest son, and we were able to reminisce because my dad was really a great mentor to me and to so many others. But I know for a lot of other people out there, it was mezze, mezze, poco, poco, because their fathers, you know, they're real curmudgeons, real contrarians, a real pain in the ass. Was that the way it was for you?
Well, yeah, you know, I give my father money now because whenever I got him a gift, it was a problem. And my favorite version of that, it was 18 years ago, and he wouldn't tell me what he wanted. You know, like, well, Mother's Day is the big cojone. Oh, don't get me anything. And it's annoying. Just tell me something. I'll get it for you. And finally, I asked my mom, and she said, you know what he wants? Just get him some basil plants. He didn't get to the nursery. I said, that's going to be my gift. She says, at least he'll appreciate it. And I said, all right. So I went to the store. I got 4 basil plants. What is that, $12 maybe? I repot them. I make a nice little thing. I drive out to the house on Long Island. And as I'm driving, I see the car. I see this Lincoln, burgundy-colored Lincoln in the driveway. And I think, oh, somebody's visiting us, you know? So I get in, and I come out. And my mother's at the door. I say, who's here? Cousin Junior? Who's here? She says, oh, the car? Yeah, your brother gave that to your father last night for Father's Day. So I'm standing there with these 4 plants in my hand, these 4 little basil plants. And my father comes out, oh, what's these? I said, it's your Father's Day gift. Yeah. I said, I got you a 747. It hasn't gotten here yet. I didn't even know what to say. I felt ridiculous.
Oh, but, it was such a big spender. You throw nickels around like manhole covers there, Bill Ervolino.
So he says, oh, should I put them on the deck? I said, yeah. I said, yeah, unless you want to drive over them with your new car and make some pesto. I don't know. What do you want to do?
Who got him the car? Who got him that burgundy Lincoln?
My brother's in the car business, you know, so it's like they need a car. I'm going to get them a car. But nobody tells me anything. And so I'm there with 4 plants, and there's a car in the driveway. What are you going to do?
And what is your dad like? I mean, he's up in years, right? He's how old?
He's going to be 91 in a couple of months. He's a pain. He's a pain in everything. But anyway, like I said, I gave him a card. I gave him some cash. Let him do what he wants with it. You want to know the worst gift I ever got?
Yeah, yeah. What's the worst?
Shorts.
What?
Years ago, it was Father's Day, and my family came out to my house in Jersey. And my sister-in-law gives me this big basket of stuff. I said, what's this? She goes, well, I'm my niece's godfather also. She goes, your godfather. So she got you a godfather's gift. And I had this basket, and it's a CD, a book. You know, it's people that put like a gift thing together.
Sure.
Things I really didn't want. But the one thing I especially didn't want was short pants, which I don't wear. And I opened it up as a pair of black short pants, like gym short types, you know?
Oh, what do you have, gnarly knees?
Yeah, I have skinny, hairless legs. Yeah. My father was called Bird Legs in the Navy, by the way.
Bird Legs.
That was his nickname. Yeah. And I don't really walk, you know, you would never back in the day see my father at the mall in short pants. You know, Italian men only wore them in the backyard. They didn't walk around. But now, you know, now they're down to your knees or lower, your ankles. So people wear them.
Yeah, but you had to wear it. It was a gift, right?
I threw them in the closet. But what happened was somebody at work was having a party, and I got the invitation, pool party, and it said dress luau. And I had no luau clothes with me. But I thought to myself, you know, I have those shorts. I never wore them. Let me go find them, see if I can find them. I go in the closet. I dust them off. I put them on with a T-shirt. I'm like, all right. And I'm embarrassed even to leave the house with my legs sticking out like this. But I go out. My neighbors, of course, are all out there. Oh, you're wearing shorts. How nice. I got to the party. There's too many people there. The whole block is full of traffic. So I walk. I have to walk down the whole block like Bess Myers and, you know, Miss America in my short pants. Hi, how are you? And so I get to the party, and everybody's looking at me and they're like, oh, Ralph Lauren. I said, what? So apparently there's like a logo on the shorts.
Ah.
Ralph Lauren. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So about a few minutes later, one of the girls comes over to me. She goes, Bill, she goes, Bob from the art department says you got your shorts on inside out. I said, what? She goes, see the logo, how fuzzy it is? She goes, also, they're backwards. I said, backwards. She goes, the fly isn't, I didn't even know they had a fly. I put them on, I didn't even know. So now I'm totally feel like a moron. I run in the house, I go out, turn them out, turn them inside out, come back, hello, hello, in my short pants, hello, waving to everybody. And I stay there for another 3 hours, got to walk down this whole block again in these stupid shorts. I get home, I can't wait to take them off. And next week I see my sister-in-law. I say, you know, I wore those shorts you wore to a party, and she starts laughing. And I tell her, I have on backwards, and she's laughing. And inside out, now she's hitting her legs, she's laughing. I said, Joyce, it's not that funny. She said, Bill, those were underwear.
Underwear? So you were wearing Ralph
Lauren? I wore underwear, out of the house, down the block, all over the place, at a party. I had underwear underneath them, but they was underwear. And, you know, being an Italian boy, I never bought underwear in my life. I don't even know where they sell it. I always got it for Christmas and my birthday. it was black underwear, which I didn't even know they made. And that was it. I spent the whole day walking around in my underwear.
Bill, you are the classic definition of a gavone.
I'm a gavone, yeah.
You had no idea that you were walking around with, like, knockoff DVDs in Fruit of the Loom.
I thought they were, like, gym shorts. I didn't know they made black underwear. I had no idea. Who gives anybody underwear as a gift anyway for Father's Day? I mean, it was, like, a weird gift. Anyway.
Bill, that experience is incredible. From your dad out in Long Island, the contrarian curmudgeon, to you wearing Ralph Lauren underwear around and thinking it was shorty shorts, you got to catch Bill Ervolino. Look, he's got a great column in The Record. Just go online and you can read a multitude of them and get a belly laugh like you just got from him talking about his columns.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practice like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
How disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
.55 and this is the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Fever. Could have been my theme song on June 19th of 1992 because it is the 25th anniversary of that morning when I was co-hosting the morning show here, Angels in the Morning, with my wife at the time, Lisa, and I was catching a cab to come to the same facility, sit in the same chair, Hyattop Madison Square Garden. When, as I got in the back of the cab on Avenue A in St. Mark's Place, it was like no other cab that's ever existed. The driver was a guy named Joey D'Angelo, who had been mentored by Sammy the Bull Gravano, the underboss of the Gambino crime family, who had just completed testifying against John Gotti Sr. That testimony slammed the book on Sr., who was sent to Marion Correctional Facility in Illinois, where years later he would drop dead of throat cancer and go straight to hell without an asbestos suit. But during that trial, Gotti Sr. was listening every morning from his jail cell before going to Eastern District Court to the Curtis and Lisa show, The Angels in the Morning, where we would recount what had happened in the courtroom the day before. And he became apoplectic, told his underboss, his son, John Gotti Jr., he wanted me whacked and silenced. And that's when the plot was put together. As John Gotti Jr. went to Canarsie, my old stomping grounds, and met with my enemy of all enemies, Little Nick Carrasso, who runs the Gambino crime family, or did at that time, in the Canarsie section of Brooklyn. He got together his shooter, his assassin, Michael Leonardi, who had killed six, put him together with Joey D'Angelo, hatched a plot in which they would steal a yellow cab, bring it to the chop shop run by Carmen Agnello, the son-in-law of John Gotti Sr., and they would turn it into a rolling coffin, hopefully pick me up in the Lower East Side on my way to WABC. And on the ninth day, they got lucky and ended up, Michael Leonardi ended up filling my lower extremities with hollow point bullets. I was lucky to jump out of that cab and save my life. 12 years later, Gotti Jr. was indicted for the attempted murder and kidnapping of me, along with the shooter Leonardi, the driver D'Angelo. Eventually, it went to trial four separate times. D'Angelo decided to cooperate and told a bookend story similar to mine. Leonardi, the shooter, who grew up in Canarsie, although younger than me, ended up getting 20 years. He's on Lompoc in California. But the guy who masterminded the hit on me, John Gotti Jr., is out there in Oyster Bay Cove, oh, crying poverty as he lives in his McMansion, his palazzo. But, you know, he may have skated on technicality. But I will never forgive, I will never forget, and I am a lucky man to be alive today.